Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com.
It is Wednesday, September the 11th. It is 23 years since the vicious terrorist attacks of 9/11/2001. I have dedicated a large chunk of my broadcasting space, so much as it's serviceable, to remembering 9/11. And every year on September the 11th, wherever I am, whatever station I've been with, whatever folks I've had the fortune of speaking with, I've asked all of us to turn our attention back to remember 9/11/2001. Now, I know we had a big debate last night, and make no mistake, we will be talking about that. We've got Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, who's going to be joining us in a few moments. They switched up some times on the House of Representatives votes, so we're just, you know, trying to play as nicely as we can with the scheduler. So she'll be here hopefully in the next couple of moments. We will chat with her, I promise you, make no mistake. The debate last night was interesting. I had some friends who said, cakewalk, Trump took it. No, he didn't. And there were others that said, oh my God, Kamala Harris ate his lunch. No, she didn't. Here's what we can take away from it. I mean, I've got to be honest about it, and you know what side I happen to be on. That certainly didn't change the way I'm going to vote. Wouldn't change my perception of either candidate. I was more impressed with her than I expected to be, and I was slightly disappointed in him. There you go. I mean, it not earth-shattering in either direction. Here's what was clear. The reason she has been hiding, in addition to the fact she didn't have a clue about a clue, the reason she's been hiding is that she has been rehearsing. She has not been preparing for a debate. Let us be very clear on that. She has been rehearsing. She's been rehearsing lines. It is the same as being in a television show, in a movie, on a theater stage. She was running lines. I do wonder, and I don't want to buy into any conspiracy theories, but I do wonder, did she have some of the questions ahead of time? But boy, because sure, it sure did look like it. It felt like it. But I don't know. I know she delivered her lines fairly well. And the President Trump, who was on stage last night, was not as laid back, if you will, as introspective as the President Trump we had seen for the last, I don't know, 2 months or thereabouts. I think she got under his skin, which is not a good look. It's not a good look. When you look at the substance, though, there's no doubt there. He hit it out of the park on the substance. It was the style for him was just not the best. Is it enough to change anyone's perception? Is it enough to change anyone's vote? I don't know. I'm doing some of the analysis on the numbers, and I will share it all with you as we head through the afternoon. But I will tell you this, despite the fact that each side is claiming victory, the independents and the unswayed up until that point last night seem to be breaking, believe it or not, just about equally. Just about equal, with some showing huge support during the debate for President Trump. Will we see another debate? I don't know. I certainly hope so, because I think she is overconfident, and I'm hoping that President Trump would take from last night, boy, maybe we should prepare just a little bit more. So we'll be talking about that as we head through the afternoon and observing the 23rd anniversary of those brutal 9/11 attacks. Jimmy Galliano, retired supervisory special agent from the FBI, is going to be with us. Chesterfield County Sheriff Carl Leonard is going to be here. Both of them first responders who were there at Ground Zero And Congresswoman Elise Stefanik is going to be with us, and we'll be talking about the debate last night. It is 310 Jeff Katz, News Radio, WR.
American 11, are you trying to call?
The cockpit is not answering their phone. Our number one has been staffed, and our five has been staffed.
Hey, I'm going to call from Washington. I am in a situation with American 11, a possible hijack.
What's going on, Betty? Aircraft is erratic again. Problems very erratic.
Three 14, Jeff Katz, News Radio WRVA. It is Wednesday. It is September the 11th. And throughout the course of this afternoon, you and I are going to reflect on, remember, share some stories of 9/11. Right? It's taken on its own sort of a day. You say 9/11, you don't even have to give the year. But today, believe it or not, is the 23rd anniversary. Where were you? Heidi and I were looking at our brand new little baby. I was doing mornings in Las Vegas. Great radio station. Really great program director. Amazing guy, but I digress. But that's where I was. And it was a Tuesday back in 2001. And I knew that because I had come from a Monday night football event. And when I got there, man, I just thought, I don't have anything to talk about. Boy, did that change. We'll be talking about that as we head through the afternoon. Jimmy Galliano, retired FBI special agent who was at Ground Zero, will be with us. Our very own Chesterfield County Sheriff Carl Leonard, who was at Ground Zero as part of the Coast Guard, will be with us. And you and I will be talking about what we did or did not hear or see last night as President Trump and Vice President Harris faced off. Well, that's not true. President Trump faced off with Vice President Harris and then the two hacks from ABC News, but that's another story for another time. Congresswoman Elise Stefanik was certainly paying close attention, and I would imagine she's got a thought or three on all of this. Congresswoman, thank you for being here.
Great to be with you, Jeff.
What did you hear last night that made you say, yep, that's the President Trump I support?
Well, first of all, it was a clear contrast between President Trump's success in his first term, the economic success, the national security strength, as well as the secure border. Compare that with Kamala Harris's failed record as Joe Biden's open borders are, as the deciding vote for Joe Biden's Inflation Expansion Act, and just the weak foreign policy of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. She was the last person in the room advising Joe Biden when he made the decision for the catastrophic withdrawal from Afghanistan. And what was interesting is, you're right, it was a three-on-one debate. You had both of the moderators not functioning as moderators. They were activists supporting Kamala Harris. So Trump wasn't just debating Kamala, he was debating the two moderators as well. So anyone viewing that could see the bias. And I think President Trump won that debate. I also think the headlines that are out today were pre-written. They were going to write no matter what that Kamala won. But if you look beneath the headlines at actually undecided voters, Trump is winning undecided voters who viewed the debate. So I think, despite the media putting all of their emphasis to prop Kamala Harris up, I actually think you're going to see the polls get stronger for President Trump after the debate.
Wow, I love to hear that. Congresswoman Elise Stefanik is joining us. Congresswoman, as I watched it last night, I watched the first part of it, and then I listened to the second part of it on the radio, and I heard different things. You know, you experienced different things. Her body language, I thought, was just absolutely positively childish.
Yes, and the debates are, you're right, if you listen to it, you have a very different experience than you watch it. And she did not show the strength that was needed, especially when compared to President Trump, who exudes strength and always does well on the debate stage. I also think there's such a thing as being overcoached. She was overcoached in terms of her mannerisms that were prepped ahead of time. And people don't want to see that. You have to envision the next commander-in-chief going up against Putin, going up against Xi, and she did not cross that bar. Again, the media is doing everything they can to prop her up. But for voters who are not paying attention to the chattering class at the cocktail parties, that are just watching about how these policies are going to impact me and who's going to get this country out of this mess, overwhelmingly, President Trump wins.
you talk about her being overcoached. And the way I described it just a few moments ago before you arrived was that she didn't prepare for the debate. She rehearsed. She was running lines like she was in a television show or a movie.
Yes, that's what I mean by overcoach, when you can tell that they're rehearsed and it's not focused on the policy issues. The other real weakness is she said, I have a plan. And everybody in America is thinking to myself, well, you've been in office for nearly 4 years and the plan hasn't worked and you're not even talking about the specifics of your plan. So that was the other failure she had, was she talked a lot about herself. Yep. And not about how the policies impact real people, people who are struggling with inflation going to the grocery store, people who see energy prices going up, people who are seeing that their security and safety is at risk because these wide open borders. So, again, President Trump is deeply connected to the American people. He, I know from my constituents or from the Gold Star families who lost their loved ones because of the withdrawal from Afghanistan, or law enforcement officers, President Trump understands that his policies and leadership impact real people's lives, and that's why he is running to save this country.
Congresswoman Elise Stefanik is joining us. You made a great observation there that these headlines, of course, were pre-written. If you spend any time with the ABC News folks watching their pre-debate show, it was a cheerleading session. It was a pep rally for the vice president. But what about the assertions that she got under President Trump's skin when she talked about people leaving his rallies, a couple of other things, where it just seemed like she was annoying him?
Well, you know what? The moderators didn't correct that. While they went out of their way to push back on President Trump has to push back when she makes those falsehoods. She made numerous falsehoods throughout the debate, and he needs to set that record straight before talking about his policies. I think he did that. But he can't just let that go unanswered. Again, he is right. I've been to many of his rallies. They are energetic. People are there for hours and hours. Kamala Harris and Joe Biden and Democrats can't fill a stadium for their rallies. So he had to push back on that. I think he did it effectively. Again, for viewers who were just watching the debate, which is millions of Americans, increasingly they're going to support President Trump. That's a very different perspective than the mainstream media, who just had who they wanted to win, which was Kamala Harris.
Yeah, it's a great point. Again, they had their verdict already passed long before this ever took place. Now the question is, will there be another debate? Up until now, President Trump has said, hey, let's have a debate, you know, once a week if you want to. I'm available for it. And the Harris folks have been hiding. Now we've got the Harris people saying, well, maybe we'll do another one. Do you get any sense from President Trump's campaign, would they or wouldn't they?
Well, first of all, Kamala Harris has a lot more questions she needs to answer from the American people. This is someone who has yet to sit for an interview, one-on-one with a journalist with hard-hitting questions. And it is absurd to run for President of the United States and not sit for that interview. Look, when I was 29 years old running for Congress, I sat for those interviews all the time about why I was running, answering tough questions. She needs to do that running for President of the United States, and that pressure is going to be on. I also think Kamala Harris is the type of candidate, the more people hear from her, the worse her approvals get. And that's really the kiss of death for any type of candidate, versus President Trump continues to gain support. People who are getting off the sidelines, who maybe didn't support him in the past, but see the destruction that Kamala Harris's policies have caused and are going to vote for Trump this election cycle.
So do you think there will or will not be another debate?
I don't know. That's a decision that President Trump is and his team are going to have to make. You know, Kamala Harris, they clearly want to handpick the moderators. They want this debate to be rigged like the ABC debate. Yep. And again, she needs to sit for interviews before she starts doing that. But that's going to be hashed out. The real issue is who presents the best leadership and the best plan and record to save the country. And that's overwhelmingly Trump. We saw what he did in the first term. Yep. And then we have seen how quickly the economy has soured, how quickly the world is on fire under Kamala Harris and Joe Biden.
I don't think she said anything truthful, Madam Congresswoman, after she introduced herself and said, hi, I'm Kamala Harris.
Well, she tried to wipe away her previous positions. She supports banning fracking. She supports defunding the police. She wanted to use dollars to bail out criminals who burnt Minneapolis to the ground and other cities to the ground. She is very radical. This is not a moderate U.S. senator. This is a radical San Francisco liberal that's deeply out of touch. When she talks about her values haven't changed, she's right. Her values are far left. They are radical, and they're just politically trying to play this game. But you know what? The voters are smart. They're going to see through that, and particularly in states like Pennsylvania, where a position to ban fracking is devastating, every voter is going to know that before they go to the polls.
Well, I hope you'll pass along to President Trump's team that here in Virginia, I've now seen some television commercials for Harris, and the conventional thinking would be she wouldn't need to run them here because Joe Biden won Virginia by 10 points. But the fact that she's running them indicates to me it's very much a toss-up. It's a real race here in Virginia. We're hoping to see President Trump come back and help to rally the troops here.
Yes, Virginia is very important. We're going on offense in some of these House seats, particularly Virginia 7. We're supporting Derek Anderson because we need to pick up seats in the House to have a strong Republican majority, supporting great candidates like Jen Kiggins, who is a great representative for Virginia's 2nd District, and also build on the success of Governor Glenn Youngkin, who made history in his gubernatorial race and really showed, like President Trump, that today's Republican Party is the party of hardworking Americans, it's the party of parents, and it's the party of economic opportunity.
And don't forget, the gentleman who is soon to be my congressman, who's been a friend forever, John McGuire in the 5th District here. He's doing a...
Absolutely. He's excellent. We're looking forward to serving with him. I saw him last week.
Congresswoman, I always appreciate you being here. And as a Jewish American, let me just say thank you so much for holding the fascistic university presidents to account. It means a lot.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you. We'll have her back. That is Congresswoman Elise Stefanik from New York. A great lady. The last time that most of us heard from Congresswoman Stefanik was the hearings. Remember those? She summoned in, or they invited in, or subpoenaed, I don't know, however the House works. They had those goofy presidents from the universities come in and tell all sorts of lies. I mean, here they were. They were propping up Hamas right on the campuses, talking about killing the Jews. That was all fine with these presidents. And it was Congresswoman Elise Stefanik who held their feet to the fire. And she did one hell of a job. She really, really did. I like her perspective on the debate last night. I'm going to dive into some of the numbers that are coming out, and it's interesting. I will remind you that I did half and half last night. Half and half. Heidi actually had a concert she was going to. I'm married to a rock chick, so every time I turn around, she's going to a concert. You'd think she's like on tour with a band or something, but I had to watch it last night, and I had to listen to it. Ordinarily, my plans are I'll watch it the next day because I've just become so disgusted with so much of the political stuff. Really, I don't watch it live anymore. And then I thought, no, this is a big one. So first, I subjected myself to the ABC pseudo news pregame show, which was nothing but a pep rally for Kamala Harris. It was absurd. Then I watched the first half of it, the first 45 minutes, and then I listened to the final 45 minutes. Now, as I was watching it, I thought, I don't think he's doing all that well. I don't, because I was looking at him. But I was looking at her going, well, she just looks like a rather pathetic child with all of these goofy faces and the hands over here and the hands over there. Listening to it was very different. Very different. I don't think Donald Trump won. But I don't think Donald Trump lost. I know that sounds weird. I see it as a push. That's what we would say in cards or a draw. She did perform better than many of us expected her to. He was not quite as good as many of us had hoped he would be. It was doesn't elect people, doesn't change people's minds. But you go through some of these crosstabs coming out now, independents apparently swinging to Trump. We'll be talking about all of this at Politics and Pints. You know it. Brian Kilmeade will be there. Dana Lash is coming. John Reed will be there. Get your tickets now. It is WRVA.com. How you get them? Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. 3:33. Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. It is Wednesday. It is September the 11th. It is 23 years to the day since those terrorist attacks against our homeland. You know, that's a phrase we didn't even hear before that. Think about it. Did you ever refer to the United States of America as our homeland? I never did. I it was one of those things that happened after the 9/11 attacks when President Bush stands up this brand new agency, the Department of Homeland Security. Huh? What? And we're moving some agencies from over there to over there, and there's got to be better coordination, and this agency wasn't talking to that agency, and that agency wasn't talking to this agency. And you go, oh, my gosh. And what about those who got up that morning, and they went to work? They went to work. No idea what's going to happen, of course. You think about some of the people who, well, their alarm didn't go off, or they spilled their coffee, or they couldn't get their tie tied right, or they missed their train. They were the lucky ones. And then you think about the men and women who were the first responders. You know, I'm an ex-cop, so I joke all the time about firefighters. How they somehow figured out, you know, they get a full salary while they're sleeping and they're eating. But let me tell you something. Those guys are the craziest human beings, and I mean that in the nicest, best possible way. 343 members of the New York Fire Department ran into those buildings. You had firefighters who were not Catholic, who were getting last rites at the bottom of the building. Why? Because they knew they were not getting out, and they still went in there. Father Michael Judge, the first casualty. I mean, I just sit here and I think, oh my gosh, how does anybody do what those men and women did? Port Authority Police Department, very near and dear to my heart, 37 deaths. The largest single day line of duty death for a law enforcement agency. Federal agents. Folks like our friend Jimmy Galliano, retired supervisory special agent from the FBI, and I'm happy that Jimmy is joining us this afternoon. Jimmy, thank you for being here, sir.
Jeff, thanks for having me. I've done a few of these today, and I tell you, it just doesn't get any easier pulling up the memories for all of us. But Jeff, I think that we have a charge to do so, to forget about it, to push it aside because it makes us uncomfortable. I think we'd be doing a disservice to all the men and women who lost their lives that day, especially the ones that you pointed out that ran to the sound of the guns and ran into the burning buildings.
Jimmy, I think you're spot on. I think every once in a while, people are charged to do something, right? People have a calling, and I think you and I have an obligation to the fallen, in this case, to keep telling their stories. I would love for you to share with my listeners this afternoon where you were, what you were doing September the 11th, 2001.
Sure. So, Jeff, you know, to put it into context, the USS Cole, a U.S. naval destroyer, which was docked in the Gulf of Aden in a place called Yemen, you know, around the world, long way away from here, had been attacked by Al-Qaeda terrorists just a few months, a little less than a year, I guess, before that. And this was Al-Qaeda's, you know, second attack on us. And I had been dispatched there, Jeff, with the other members of the FBI's hostage rescue team to protect the ship and to work on, you know, beginning the investigation and supporting and protecting the agents there. And then you come to, you know, little less than a year later. And, you know, some of the same people that got impacted in this, I was on a drug squad at the time. And as you pointed out, the people that changed a flight at the last moment for no big reason, or the people that got stuck in traffic and missed a flight and weren't on one of the four doomed airliners. I just had an ACL surgery on my knee, and I had a doctor's appointment that morning, and instead of coming in early to lower Manhattan, to literally six blocks away from the World Trade Center where the federal building was. I was headed to Queens, and the first plane hit. I rerouted, tried to come back. The second plane hits. Stuck in traffic, fighting my way in. They're not letting anybody into Manhattan. They're not letting anybody, access the tunnels or the bridges except for law enforcement and first responders. I make it down to the Brooklyn Bridge, which, again, is in the shadow of the World Trade Center. And as I'm getting out of my car and heading down to the World Trade Center, the first tower comes down. And obviously for all of us, that visceral, palpable feeling of the shock of seeing these these engineering marvels. I mean, they'd been designed in the 60s, and I think they were actually came online in the early 70s, and they were literally the wonders of the world. And to watch nearly 3,000 people perish in less than an hour in those, four different locations, the two trade towers, yep. Obviously the Pentagon in D.C. near where you guys are in Central Virginia, and then in a field in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Jeff, just utterly surreal day, and it's uncomfortable, and it brings up emotions. But if we don't do this, we're not doing the right thing when we say hashtag never forget.
Absolutely. Jimmy Galeano joining us, retired supervisory special agent out of the FBI. Jimmy, I saw a photo that you had posted. You've got your leg all braced up. That must be the ACL surgery. But you're right there. I mean, you're at ground zero.
So that was at Trinity Church, which was a place that George Washington had actually worshipped at during the 18th century when we were a fledgling nation. And it literally was in the shadow of the trade towers. And obviously when the buildings came down and all those poor souls, perished and lost their life, and it changed the world. It certainly changed the United States. But, one of the uncomfortable tasks that we had for the FBI, you mentioned the firefighters and how many of them died, 343 of them, and the department and the people down there searching. There were firefighters and public safety people coming from around the country to come and help and support. But you have different silos of work and responsibility. Their job was to try to find anyone who had survived. And there were some that had survived in a corner, I believe, of the North Tower, and there were some rescues. Certainly not as many as we would have liked to have seen, but there were some. For the FBI, our job was to figure out who had done it. Now, pretty quickly, we determined that this was, a terrorist plot by Al-Qaeda, 19 terrorists, and they were funded by Osama bin Laden, and they'd been training and hiding out in Afghanistan, and this large network that was fully supported with terror money and fully supported with other countries being behind it, whether, there was involvement with leaders in other nations in the Middle East. All this is going on. We didn't know any of that at the time. And our job was to sift through. Jeff, when I say this, several blocks away from the trade towers, from the footprint of the trade towers, 4 feet of debris, 4 feet of crushed, pulverized concrete, steel girders that had melted, because when jet fuel burns, it burns at an insanely hot, high temperatures, and to try to respectfully recover bodies and at the same time respectfully recover effects from people like wedding rings or a picture from someone's desk on the 79th floor, and at the same time search for airplane parts, anything that could possibly put the jigsaw puzzle together. So Jeff, that was probably 2 or 3 months worth of work immediately after 9/11, is trying to do that. And I'm humbled that there were so many people that were a part of that. It was a huge team effort. And one last quick thing, Jeff, to see the folks, especially the people in Manhattan that felt so helpless, they couldn't do things. They'd see us speeding down the West Side Highway or down the FDR, the Harlem River Drive, yeah, every morning and every night. Everybody's on 12-hour or 15-hour shifts. And the amount of restaurants that set up tents down in the medians, between the rows of traffic, handing out food, bottled water, the people that responded. Jeff, it impacted our nation. We'd never been attacked like that since December 7th of 1941 at Pearl Harbor, right. And it really changed and shaped the way that younger generations, our kids' age, who were either just born or adolescents at the time, the way they view the world.
Jimmy Galliano is with us. Jimmy, a retired supervisory special agent from the FBI. He was there. He was there. Jimmy, you know, we talk about the members of the FDNY. We talk about the Port Authority Police, the New York City Police. I think the AMS folks were still a separate agency, not yet merged, if I remember correctly. But we also had federal folks, people who were in your line of work, FBI and other federal agencies. You want to share, I don't know, a story or two about that?
Sure. So, Jeff, you pointed out the numbers, and it's so important that that you did that. We know that 3,000, you know, Americans lost their lives. We also know there were 343 members of the New York Fire Department. Yep. There were 37 members of the Port Authority Police Department, 23 of the NYPD, and there were 10 federal agents that were, you know, working in or around the trade towers. And two of them were friends and colleagues of mine. One was Lenny Hatton, who was a former Marine who had come into the FBI. His expertise was he was a special agent bomb technician. He was one of the guys that diffused bombs and did post-blast analysis. So if there was a blast, he'd be a guy to respond to it to try to put together the pieces and find the perpetrator behind it. Mm-hmm. And he had run into the building, into the South Tower, and had gone up to the top of the building attempting to establish communications with our federal office, which was a little bit further uptown, because obviously all the antennas are on that building at the World Trade Center. When the World Trade Center came down, both buildings, it knocked out communications, and Lenny was trying to set that up when he perished. The second was John O'Neill. John O'Neill was a special agent in charge. He was in charge of the counterterrorism division of the New York office of the FBI, the largest FBI office. And Jeff, when you talk about the irony and the quirk of the cruel look of fate, he had retired from the FBI's New York division on Friday and reported to work as the chief of security for the World Trade Center on Monday. 9/11 was the next day, Tuesday. And the last time he was seen, he was coming in and out of the South Tower with a flip phone glued to his ear, trying to assist people coming in, you know, to get them out of the building, mm-hmm. when he perished in the rubble.
Wow. You know, the other thing, Jimmy, we would really be remiss if we didn't point this out. There were so many first responders, including many folks from the Bureau who were there at Ground Zero. They were engaged at that point, not in rescue, but in recovery and evidence recovery and analysis and the rest of it. But so many of them, as you know, were exposed to awful chemicals and toxic fumes. A lot of those guys have died since then as a result of various types of cancer.
Yeah, and we have to consider them to be service martyrs as well, Jeff,
yes,
because,
sir.
You know, at the time, I mean, you know, when this happened, I mean, it's one of those grim jokes that we'd make and go, boy, OSHA would never be approving the work conditions of us standing on this, right. On this pile, you know, sifting through rubble or being transported out. I spent a month out at the Fresh Kills landfill. And yes, a landfill is a garbage dump, but they cleared out an area and the truckloads of debris were brought out there. So from Manhattan, from lower Manhattan, across the Verrazano Narrows Bridge into Staten Island, brought to this big dump site. And then FBI agents were there to sift through it again, looking for, you know, something as small as a wing nut or a screw, yep. or something from the plane that could possibly piece this together. How healthy was that? I mean, yeah. And basically using paper masks like we used during the COVID pandemic, which we realized early on, hey, these paper and cloth masks, they're not really the it's not the margin of victory to keep you safe. So, yeah,
that's right. That's
there have
right.
been far, far more people that have perished post 9/11 than did on that day in the public safety realm, and we should obviously keep their memories alive as well.
Do you mind venturing a little insight, venturing an opinion, or offering some insight on the change in the, well, communications, right? Because there were certain federal agencies not talking to other federal agencies. There's this afterwards. There's this whole brand new thing called the Department of Homeland Security, and agencies are being moved from one department to another. And here we are, Jimmy, 23 years later, and that first wave of DHS people, they've got their 20 years in. They've retired. How much did things change from then till now?
Well, let's go back to, we could go back to as far as General Custer's ill-fated final mission, you know, out in the Black Hills, when he divided his forces and then had difficulty communicating with them to gather them back together or to move them along. And we're talking, that was 1877.
Yeah.
Here we are, fast forward to 2001, and whether it's the military or whether it's law enforcement, whether it's consequence management, like fire departments, things like that, interoperability is still the number one cause of systems failure when you are trying to do crisis response or consequence management. And it's difficult. We saw it out there in Butler, Pennsylvania, when the former president was shot and nearly assassinated on July 13th of this year. And yes, Jeff, there were lessons learned when you have a vertical crisis site like the trade towers were. And again, they were engineering marvels, those buildings, for the 1960s and 1970s. Now, not so much. And why is that? Just because of the way they were built, what you were never expecting that a jetliner full of, you know, jet fuel was going to slam into them. But the mistakes that were made, and God bless the men and women from the fire department, set up a command post on the first floor of the North Tower and the South Tower, and we're so close to it that as they're trying to command and control things and having difficulty doing that, they couldn't talk to their guys hauling their gear, their bunker gear, all the way up those, 110 flights.
That's right.
And they were on the first floor. So, yes, communications, it has gotten better, Jeff. It's never going to be a panacea. It's always the first thing that goes during a crisis incident is being able to talk to each other. But it is something I know is being worked on and has gotten exponentially better since 2001.
Jimmy, I thank you for everything that you've done. I thank you for joining us. That is Jimmy Galliano, retired supervisory special agent from the FBI, talking about his efforts post 9/11 in New York at Ground Zero at the Fresh Kills, Phil. And I want to remind you that Jimmy sits on the board of directors of the Law Enforcement Legal Defense Fund. They offer defense to law enforcement officers who are facing legal action that's unwarranted. It's an incredible organization. PoliceDefense.org, PoliceDefense.org is where you ought to go and look for it. If you're not yet following Jimmy over on X, please do that. You will find some amazing information, and Jimmy is not just a bright guy, but he's a funny guy as well. James A. Galliano over on X. It is 3:51. Jeff Katz, News Radio WRBA.
A plane just exploded.
What?
The 737.
It what?
Like the World Trade.
Who are you talking to? Oh God. Oh my God.
United 175, New York. We have some problems over here right now. We might have a hijack over here, too.
Jules, this is Ryan. Listen, on an airplane that's been hijacked. If things don't go well, it's not good news. I just want you to know I absolutely love you. I want you to do good. So happy to sign. Same to my parents and everybody. And I just totally love you. And I'll see you in Denver. Bye, babe.
.356, Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRBA. It is September the 11th, 23 years since those words were uttered. Throughout the afternoon, we're going to discuss and remember and share some things about what happened on September the 11th, 2001. I remember each year, as I was working, as I mentioned to you, out in Las Vegas. And the night before, we had had a Monday night football party. And when you're working, say, like mornings in a very big market, you get up really early. I used to get up at 1 o'clock in the morning, and I'd be at the radio station by 2 o'clock in the morning. I mean, it's a full day. And I remember sort of shuffling in from this Monday night football party and crawling in bed for a couple of hours and then getting up and going to work. And we had this brand new little bundle of joy, right? Harry was a newborn. And I went to work and I said to my producer, man, I'm exhausted. I'm beat. I got nothing to talk about. There's nothing going on. It's going to be a brutal day. Well, I was right. about the last part. And I remember when he actually came in and said, you know what, a plane just hit the World Trade Center. So what am I thinking? I'm thinking it's one of these weekend pilots out of Teterboro, New Jersey, you know, a little Cessna, Piper Cub, something like that, clipped the building, and, you know, what are you going to do? Hey, we'll probably mention it, but that's not going to get us through the next couple of hours. And then the second plane hit, and our entire world was turned upside down, wasn't it? I wound up spending, I think, I have to go back and look, I think it was 18 or 19 hours on the air. I got home briefly, and Heidi and I kind of looked at each other like, you know, what the hell? What are we going to do? And we looked at this little kid, Harry. We looked at him like, well, what have we done to him? What kind of a world have we brought him into? And everything changed. Everything changed. We'll talk as we head through the next couple of moments. I want to remind you that the Chronic Care of Richmond text line is always available to you. Why don't you send me a text? Let me know what you're thinking today, what you're feeling today. 833-804-1140. 833-804-1140. Chesterfield County Sheriff Carl Leonard, who was part of the Ground Zero crew, as part of the United States Coast Guard. He's going to be with us at 4:35. You've got a moment here. Head on over to WRBA.com. Get your tickets for Politics and Pints. That's coming up on October the 16th. It's me. It's John Reed. We got Brian Kilmeade coming back. Dana Lash is coming in. Gutman is going to be here. Only way to get your tickets is online, WRBA.com. It is 3:59. Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRBA.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.